Blog Talk Radio.
Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Omane El Bay, and today's topic is Moorish relationships, male and female. We have an exciting lineup for you tonight. What we're going to be doing is we're going to be answering some questions that is vital inside the basic family structure, and that is the relationship between the male and the female, and also we're going to be dealing with what part that plays on along with the children. The first question is, what constitutes a solid relationship between Moors, between conscious Moors, and what part does Moorish science play in the relationship? Where do the Moorish children fit in? What about Moorish men and women who are single looking for a conscious mate? Tonight we're going to do everything that we can to answer these questions in this broadcast. We're going to be coming from our sister Scheherazade Ali's books. Both books, one is entitled The Black Woman's Guide to Understanding the Black Man, and as well as The Black Man's Guide to Understanding the Black Woman. We're also going to be coming from a live feed directly from the sister herself, where she comes directly from her books. And we've divided that up into four segments. That way, we're able to cover as much information as we can tonight. If we don't get it in tonight, all of it in tonight, then we're going to have part two of this thing. But I'm going to do my best to deliver tonight and make sure that we cover all of the bases. Now, starting out, for those of you who have a Facebook account, if you have Twitter or MySpace or Black Planet and these things, if you would connect with me, or if you follow me, I follow you, or however way we do it, then we'll be able to have access to these broadcasts and have access to my wall and the materials that we're placing there on Facebook for you. If you have a Facebook account, go ahead and send me your friend request. I'll go ahead and honor it, and that way you'll be able to get a hold of me, and we can interact with one another. We're also listed there on Facebook as the Tahaka's Institute, and the Tahaka's Institute is strictly for literature that I'm taking straight out of the library and putting it right there so you can read it. Also, Tahaka's Moorish American Group is there strictly for your education by video. So you go there, and we are putting this whole thing together for you, the most vital information that you need to know about America, about what's going on with the global system of white supremacy. The entire ball of wax is put there. Everything about religion, all of these bases are covered there. And the only thing that you have to do is go there and click on the videos and look at them. It's designed for your education. There's a lot of information that you may have seen before, but when you put it in the context of getting an education so that we can remain conscious, we put that there for you for your educational purpose. Now, also, once again, I have created one of the most comprehensive libraries in the United States. You access that by simply contacting me at area code 904-303-9061, and we'll discuss that and make sure you get that and all the components that go along with it, and so you can contact me on that. So now we're going to start off by discussing some underlying things that we as people of African descent inside the United States have to understand. You have to understand this. If you can get this one thing straight in your mind, then things will begin to fall in place for you. First of all, we are all on this landmass called North America. It's also called the United States of America, but today the United States of America is a corporation. Now, as far as us in the totality of the world is concerned, we are a part of a system, and if we can understand this system, then we can make some progress by keeping the system in mind. And make no mistake about it, this system is real, and it is global. It is called the global system of white supremacy. Now, the global system of white supremacy operates under 9 points. The 9 points are as follows: economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, sex, religion, and war. Okay? So if you can understand that, now this whole thing is laid out for you in a book called The ISIS Papers. The book was written by a psychologist called Dr. Frances Cress Wilson. Now, we have her videos on the Tahaka Moorish American Group, so you can go there and you get that information until you purchase a book. Now, I don't have any stock in her book, but you can go there and purchase a book. You can get it online. Either conscious bookstores throughout your community in different parts of the United States, you can also get that book done. That is a very, very important book, and I think it's something that every man, woman, and child need to read in the United States of America of African descent. Okay? Now, also the two books that will be coming from tonight, along with the live feed, is written by a sister by the name of Shahrazad Ali, S-H-A-H-R-A-Z-A-D. And you know how to spell Ali, A-L-I, The Black Man's Guide to Understanding the Black Woman, and The Black Woman's Guide to Understanding the Black Man. If we can get these two books, they'll shed a whole lot of light on some things. And if we use these books as guides, we can strengthen the relationships that we have with each other. And because the basic unit of every society is the family. If the family is intact, then we have a good, strong base to work from. But if we allow the family to remain fragmented, if we don't do anything to stabilize the family and get the family back together, then we are scattered as a nation. So I'm posting this broadcast tonight in hopes of making some repairs on the family, making some repairs in regard to men and women relationships between men and women, and letting you know what part the children play in all of this. And we're about ready to get started here this evening. So the first thing I'm going to come to is I'm going directly into the Black Man's Guide to Understanding the Black Woman by Shahrazad Ali. We're going straight to the preface. She makes the following statement: the black man will never be able to excel until he gets his woman under control. Okay, now that is a very, very powerful statement. And I want to say a few things about that before we go directly into her live feed. In the last broadcast I done, I made the following comment: a man can rise no higher than his woman. okay, because she is a reflection of you. She is a representative of you, and she is also a representative of the relationship that you have with her. So when we understand this and understand that the most important thing that we can do as a couple is we edify one another and understand what we're up against, and we're going to have to solve these things, problems that we have, as a team. Okay? Okay, so now that that has been said, we're going to fire off the first segment from the sister, and this is coming directly from a live thing that she did on her book. And she states the following.
What I call get off those hogs lectures. And I would take the microscope out, and I would show black people how even if you cook pork, you couldn't kill the worm. I would show them that the worm was still alive in the meat after heat, because that's what they told us, that you could cook it and kill the worm. And so I would show them what it did to the brain and the spinal column. And so there were many black men who wanted to stop eating pork. They wanted to change their diet. And they were in agreement. But it was the black woman who I found who was the most adamant, who refused to change her cooking habit, who didn't want to shop differently, who didn't want to do any different meal planning. And so I say, well, now, if we are refusing to provide the black man with the proper physical food when we know food is what sustains life, then what else are we keeping from him? What else are we doing to destroy our men, to destroy our families? Because we don't know any better, or because we're too lazy, or because nobody has ever called on us to repent. And so then that led me to the study. And so as I was going along, initially I was keeping up with names and addresses and all of those things for that so-called research that they talk about. And then I found out that we didn't have a control group. There was not one set of Negroes that I could point at and say, well, these particular Negroes over here, they didn't suffer from the psychological trauma of slavery, so we don't have to deal with that. I found out that all of us had the same problem, and that we were not as different as we think we are. We are all doing the same things. We're all practicing the same patterns of behavior. A pattern is something that people follow because they think it's the right way to go. We have been doing it and approving that behavior between each other because we think, well, this is just how you do it. We have not represented our own ideas. We have not had anyone to represent our own ideas to us. The only place we have learned about how to be a woman or how a man is to be a man is on television. We haven't had that kind of a chance to study ourselves. The white woman has been the only woman we have had an opportunity to study every day of our life, on television, in every magazine we ever picked up, in every newspaper, on every radio. She's been the only model we have had. And if we think that that's not important, then we need to, you know, look at that again. We have studied that, and we have made up and came up with requirements that the white people have set for us for our man. And if he cannot come up to those requirements, then we have decided that he is impotent and unable to be our man because he disqualifies, because he does not qualify by the standards that the white people have set up. We think a good, successful relationship is one where everything goes our way. The first time it stops going our way, then we got a serious problem. We want our man to do everything we tell him to do, but we don't want to do anything he tells us to do. Yeah, it's hard language. And all of our so-called educated class together have never come up with an agenda that brought the people together to try to improve their condition like the black man's guy. Not a one of them have ever had a program that got all of the black people talking, got all of them out. Made everybody decide to make a comment, whether they wanted to or not. People are compelled to testify all over the country. I can't walk the streets. See, we've never been examined, as I said. In the breakdown of every relationship, each party in the relationship shares one half the responsibility. That's 50% of the responsibility. So, yes, the black man is 50% responsible for the breakdown of our relationship. And we are the other 50% half responsible for the breakdown of our relationship. And I ask black women, if you do not want to accept 50% of the responsibility, what percentage do you accept, and how does that behavior manifest? And I guarantee you it's already in my book. Because this lists the things that we do. We've just never seen it in print. We've never had it out front. We've never been busted. But now we have the equality we've been crying for. They're busted, and so are we. I teach that slavery tampered with nature. When I say that slavery tampered with nature, I mean that a major rite of passage for every male mammal is to provide and protect for a female and her young. Now, certainly we know that the black man has been denied that opportunity. He has not been allowed to qualify to protect his woman or provide from them, for them. They have told us that the only provision that the black man is qualified to give us is one of money. And we have made finance the major focus of our relationships with them. We have made the one thing that most of them don't even have be the criteria. We have been taught that if they do not give us money, that we are not to even allow them to be a father to their child. We have been taught that if he does not give us money, then he is not qualified to tell us what to do. We have been taught that if he does not give us money, that he doesn't have any rights in the home. It's whoever is making the money who has the rights. That's not our system. The black man provides more in a black home than just financial support. He provides direction, guidance, gratification, fulfillment, and discipline for our children. Those are the principles that are missing in our home today, which is why our children are savage in the streets. We see those children out there sometimes acting wild and uncivilized and disrespectful because they don't respect anyone, because we didn't teach them any respect. We didn't know how. And a lot of times we look at them and we say, yeah, they're out there doing this, and we act like that they dropped down out of the sky. But those are our children. We birthed them up out of our womb. They belong to us. And we are responsible for them. And for every child that's out there out of control, disrespectful, ignorant, and uneducated, they have a black mother somewhere who failed to do her job and a black father who failed to do his. It is not the responsibility. It is not the responsibility of the American government to raise our children. It is not the responsibility of the American government to support our women. And it certainly is not the responsibility of the American government to hold our man down. This book is to allow us to have a new chance to start all over and say, yes, this is what has happened. I didn't make myself like this. We don't get anything from ourselves. We pick it all up externally. And as we have picked up these bad habits, we can, you know, decide that we are not going to do them. See, what has happened is that we have been turned, sisters, into kind of like Frankenstein. I think everybody remembers the Frankenstein monster. He had somebody's arms, somebody's legs. He even had somebody else's brain inside of his skull. Oh, he was functional, but he was not himself. And so, yes, we are functional. We have been taught that having a good job means that we are a total success. We have been taught that the solution to all the problems of the black people in America is to get a job with the white people. That's just not the truth. And that's certainly not saying that it is not important for us to have money for food, clothing, and shelter. And it's not saying that we as black women are not strong. I'm here today to represent some of that monumental strength we say we have. This does not mean that we are not strong. We don't have to put our man down in order to be strong. I'm just saying that we have used our strength in the wrong direction. We've been using it against our man instead of for him. If we use the kind of strength and influence that we have in this society to support the black man, won't anybody be able to come against him? But every man is judged by his woman, and if his woman say he ain't nothing, then the whole world believes he ain't nothing. The actual fact is every man himself judge his own self by his woman. He can be out in the world being great, and the whole world can be kneeling to him. And if he come home and she say, you ain't nothing, you ain't been nothing, then that's who he believes. And yes, we have insulted our man in front of our children. It wasn't intentional. We've just been frustrated, We couldn't make you brothers do what we want you to do. We didn't have anybody else to tell sometimes. So we would say it over the children. He ain't no good. He makes me sick. He's stupid. If he loved you, he would be here with you. When every man in here knows that his relationship with his children is predicated on his relationship with their mother. And if they are not getting along with us, they are not going to spend any time with the children. That's just how that is. And I talk to brothers around this country, and I have testimonies and tons of men, letters from brothers who write and tell me that my book made them to decide to try to be a man again and try to have a woman. Now, if you think that's not an important work, I got black men who write me and say, you have made me decide not to have another white woman. I'm going to try to get back with the sisters and try them one more time.
All right.
And what I call get off those halls lectures. And
hey, I'm alone with some money, but I can always feel her presence. I don't care how far I go away. Now I got a letter today, and it made me feel so good when I read what the letter had to say. I'm gonna take the tension off you, baby, cause I'm on my way.
All right. That was the first segment of Scheherazade Ali herself, coming directly from the Black Man's Guide to Understanding the Black Woman. And what we're going to do now is we're going to go on now and get some understanding about some things for those of you who have the book, The Black Man's Guide to Understanding the Black Woman. We'll be coming to you directly from, let's see, right here on page one. And what we're going to try to do is identify for the brothers, we're going to try to identify what we are dealing with so we'll know what we're up against and where the starting point is in dealing with our woman in a relationship. And the sister describes the following in chapter one. She starts from her childhood. And it states the following. From the very first moment she's born, she becomes attached to her first teacher, which is her mother. I study her mother constantly during the initial bonding process. She learns to smile and form other mental communication techniques. She is with any other cub is taught survival skills, how to eat, dress, bathe, use the toilet, general manners, obedience, most implied by a look or spoken in a certain tone of voice. She is able to understand language long before she can speak it. She never stops studying her mother, and she never stops learning from her. Okay, now that we have this particular science, then we know that when it comes to dealing with the sister, this is what we are dealing with. We are dealing with a woman who has studied her mother in a lot of cases, okay? And we'll state that in a lot of cases. And so with that in mind, we know what we have to work with. Now, as far as the Black Man's Guide is concerned and the relationships between men and women that this show is about, what I have done in the past is I have gathered up the brothers, and I extended an invitation, and some of you might want to try this exercise in your community. I invited the brothers over to the house. I told them you didn't have to buy anything. I'm going to provide all the food for you. If there's drinks, I'm going to provide that. The only thing that I need you to do is I need you to watch a one-hour broadcast. The rules and regulations are you cannot speak during this broadcast until the broadcast is over. After the broadcast is over, each man is going to be called upon to give his own personal opinion about what he's heard and about what's going on in his own relationship with his woman. Needless to say, the first time that I did that, we started at 7 p.m. that evening, And out of 12 brothers, we didn't get through until 2 o'clock in the morning. I think we took the roof off the house because every brother was trying to explain his position and what he thought from it. Another brother was trying to explain his position and all these things. So it is a good exercise to try to iron out some things and get some understanding about things. And I just thought I'd put that out there because it was very, very successful. After I did the brothers, I went ahead and went over to some sisters' house and had them invite all sisters. Well, when we put the broadcast on, the sisters acted totally opposite of the brothers. They wanted to do everything but listen to the broadcast. Okay? The brothers sit there listening intently, but the sisters, they scattered. Okay? Now, I just wanted to put that out there so that it might be something that you might want to try to get together so you can use this tool to make some necessary corrections in your own circumstances, okay? Now, what we're going to do now is we're going to go on to the second stanza of the sister in the Black Man's Guide, and let's see what else that she has.
See, you know, nobody is going to give us this information. They have us standing around sometime and pointing at the brothers and saying, yeah, that's them over there. They ain't no good. They doing this and that and the other, and it's all negative. And they have us thinking that the black man is going to die and we're going to live on. But that's not how it's going to go. There is still one monolith in the black community, and that's that it still takes a man and a woman to make a baby. So if the black man dies, we all die. And I don't want to die. I want to live. I want my children and my grandchildren and whatever else is coming after Charizard, I want that to live. But we are not on the path of life. We're on the path of destruction. You know, learning how to get along has to be taught by force. Slavery was taught by force. We didn't volunteer for that. They made us do that. They forced us to do that. And that's how we're going to have to learn how to reunify. It's going to have to be done by force. We're going to have to make ourselves try to deal with each other. Yeah. And that's very difficult, and it certainly takes a great deal of self-control and love for your nation at large. It's the greatest form of unselfishness. Now, I don't go around advocating that people that hate each other stay together. That's not what I'm saying. That's different. We can't solve a problem or get to a solution about a problem that we refuse to acknowledge that we have. We don't have to be ashamed that we have a problem. We don't have to be ashamed to know that it is related to slavery, because all of our problems are related to slavery. And I know that that seems to be some old hat issue, and everybody want me to stop talking about that. Nobody would tell the Japanese woman to forget about the fact that during World War II, the white man interned her family, took all of their personal possessions. Nobody would tell her to forget about that. Nobody would tell the Indian woman, forget about the fact that the white man came over here and took your country and put you and your babies out on the reservation. And nobody would dare to tell the Jewish woman to forget about the Holocaust, so why I got to forget about slavery? See, the Japanese and the Indian and the Jewish woman got behind their men, and they had some very terrible histories also. But because they got behind their men and supported them and worked with them, those people are successful today. They own property. They have businesses. They got great land here and abroad. You know, they have stocks, bonds, whatever America has to offer. They own part of that. They are in a position to make decisions because they have some ownership. It's only been the black man and the black woman who didn't reunite after a terrible time. And so today we are splintered. We don't have very much. We practice envy and jealousy. You know, they taught us a lot of bad habits that we practice against each other. If we practice everything we practice against each other, against the white man, they'd have been killed out of America. Most of that stuff we reserve for our own kind. And that's wrong. We have had that rumor that that we are the backbone of the black nation because it has served to make us think we were better than the black man. We have walked around and wore that as some kind of a sacred garment. And our men have had to struggle up under the already preconceived notion that they wasn't no good. We have always heard that the black man leaves us. He walks out on us. He don't love his children. He won't take care of his family. He beat his women. He do a lot of horrible things. This book goes back to try to examine what are some of the possible contributing causes. What happened before he left? What happened? Something happened. The black man is just not bad by nature. The brothers love their children as much as any other man. Every man loves his baby. They keep wanting to tell us that our man don't even love his children. He's not a mother, though. He's a father. He's not going to have the same kind of connection to the cub that we have. We can't expect that. We keep wanting the man to act like a woman. He can't act like no woman. Praise be to Allah. I wrote the book so that the brothers would understand what's going on, because most of what we charge them with is that he can't, quote, handle us. He can't handle me. They haven't known what they were handling. They didn't have that information. The book is really a book that puts the black man on point, because it tells him what he is allowed to happen to his woman and his children. And he can never again say he didn't know what was going on, because I have told him. See, it's never been an issue about whether or not the book is true or not, brother. The issue has been that I was not supposed to tell. But that's the missing information. And I was willing to come out here and go through whatever was going to be required if it was going to reunite some of our people. If we can get one or two black families in every town to start functioning differently, to make a better man and a better woman, then this campaign is worth it. It's worth it for our entire nation. I didn't just donate money to Marvin Collins School because this is my hometown, or because I wanted to put it in my mother's name. But we must have our own black schools to educate our own children. We have to educate our own children. If it's in a closet, I would rather support them. Have my own kind, trying to teach my own kind, than sending them out there into the white people's school and let them tell them all kind of nonsense that they want to. You know, it's a very serious situation. Let us take a look at what we as black women have produced while we were allegedly backboning the black nation. One in every four black males between the age of 20 and 29 is in prison, on parole, been arrested. I had some bump with the law. Over 50% of our prison population is black, male, growing, and female. We have more black men in prison than in college. 6 out of every 10 black men between the ages of 15 and 44 are unemployed, in jail, got some disease, homosexual, or on drugs. 73% of all the black men in prison were raised by a single black woman in a home with no man. 80% of that 73% suffer child abuse in the home, victimized by the mother. 1/3 of our children drop out of school before they graduate. Over 60% of our households are headed by black women who are single, divorced, separated, or widowed. Yeah, we got a serious problem. And only God knows how many of our black babies we have killed through abortion. I think that's something the black man will never understand, how we kill that life in our womb. Because we decide we don't feel like taking care of it, it's too much of a hassle, or we change our mind about how we feel about the man. So we have been in a very, very powerful position. We can make heaven or hell for the man, and we can decide who's going to live and die. That is a great woman, I agree. But we are in a very prestigious position. We are the wives of the man who was the first man that God chose to be on the earth. That's a very great position. The most valued and the strongest man on the earth that everybody's trying to use for something. He's the most durable. He's the most persistent. He's the most determined. The black man is not wrong because he does not do what white America wants him to do. And he's not wrong because he don't do what we want him to do. We don't know everything to do ourselves. We we're learning a lot of what we think that we're supposed to do through recommendation and chance, passing information among each other, sharing secrets that'll help us to trick him, to keep him confused. We do things in front of his face, and we have learned how to convince him that he didn't even see that happen. Situation. This is the first platform black man has ever had to air his grievances about the black woman, because nobody would ever listen to him. They listen to us. And we have had many complaints. Many of them may be true, but they have complaints against us too. They've just been too cool to deal with it like that. And then God sent Sister Sherazade. I say, we're going to deal with it now. History can't be complete without dealing with it. We cannot let the history live and die and record that we were all right and they were all wrong, because that's just not the way it is. We are good people, but we are both going to be a good people. And I hear
okay, that was the second segment, and I hope we've gotten something out of that. What we're going to do now is we're going to go back to the sister's book, and this time we're going to the Black Woman's Guide to Understanding the Black Man, and we're going to deal with the children that's involved with that, because there's a very, very important point that I want to bring out here and in this. And so I'm going to be coming to you from page 19 on this book, where she makes the following statements in regards to black boys. It says, this system that we live in and this system that we have, the black boys, the system of loading the black boy's brain with foreign data, put into motion an adult black male who left home to confront the world and his destiny with absolutely no knowledge about his past. With a white man's name, an Anglo-Saxon religion, and a memory dedicated to Western values that would plague him for generations to come. This intentional cover-up laid the foundation for the confusion, the displacement that would eventually lead to his present endangered classification. The ultra-critical years between 1940 and 1990 produced current perilous legacy of black men, his sons and his grandsons. This book is about the damaging effect of the brainwashing that the black man was subjected to during that 50-year period, and it represents the first contemporary debriefing session he has ever had since slavery. Okay, now I want to bring out, before we go on to the final two feeds, I want to bring out something that's very, very important. And for those of you who are just tuning in, you are listening to Moorish Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amana Elbe. And today's topic is Moorish relationships, male and female. That is one of the most profound statements that I have heard, and it is it was true yesterday and it's still true today. And the only way that we are going to change the circumstances that we are in as people of African descent, male and female, and including our children, is we're going to have to become conscious. And so, therefore, we're going to have to embrace our story, learn everything that we can about our story. We're also going to have his story that was created by him for his people called history. All right, they created a subject called history. We're going to have to understand that, and we're going to have a conscious mindset from an Afrocentric position, because it is from that position that you will draw your strength from. Because if you know who you are, then that is your power base, is knowing who you are. We have a system that is predicated on keeping you from knowing that, keeping you from coming into the knowledge of yourself and coming into the knowledge of your culture and embracing your culture and your story. We've got to turn that around. And that is why I give out the articles that I give out each time I do a broadcast. That is why I created one of the most comprehensive libraries in the United States. So therefore, you can sit right in the privacy of your home. Your culture is there. Your story is there. Not only is information there on the Moors, there's information on the ancient Dogon tribes, there's information there on the Zulu Nation, there's information on the ancient Kemetans that we call Egyptians, there's information on practically every subject under the sun. If you need information about the brain, the workings of the body, if you want to know about our great leaders in the past, all of us there, the poets, the playwrights, all of that information is available to you. If you need to know information about the CIA, if you need to know information about the pharmaceutical industry, all of that information is there for your enlightenment so that you can become conscious, because it is your consciousness that is going to save you. You have to become conscious. You cannot continue going on inside the United States without knowing who you are. Okay? You're going to have to know about whether or not there was an established government on this landmass prior to any Europeans coming here. You need to know that. You need to know everything you can about the Moors. You need to know everything you can about the people over there on the continent of Africa. What about the people in South America? What about the people in Cuba? What about the people in all these other different countries, people of color? These are things that you need to know. It is very important for you to know these things, because whatever you are putting in the brain is what you're going to regurgitate, okay? So for those of you who like the articles that I give away, if this is your first time listening to the broadcast, or if you listen in the future, you can get that by simply contacting me at tahaka99@yahoo.com, and I'll rush that right on to you. For those of you who are interested in accessing Tahaka's archives, getting a hold to the library for yourself so that you and your family will have a power base to draw from. If you're dealing with the courts, there's information there for you. If you're dealing with sovereignty, there's information for you. If you're dealing with the Sheriff's Department, if you're dealing with the Treasury Department, if you're dealing with the Internal Revenue Service, anything that you're dealing with, if you're dealing with the mortgage company, that information is put there for you. And not only that, that information is put there on a regular basis for you. We constantly add information to that library for you in an attempt to salvage black men and black women in America, okay? And I just wanted to add that. So we're going to go on into the third segment.
All wrong, because that's just not the way it is. We are good people, but we are both going to be a good people. And I hear, you know, women around the country tell me, say, well, you have insulted black womanhood. And now anybody from any foreign country or anybody who picks your book up is going to think that all black women are like that. That's impossible. Everything I list in the book is visual and audible. You can see it or you can hear it. So if you don't see it or hear it, it ain't there. But if you see it and hear it, which you will, it's present. So there's no danger that somebody's going to look at one of us and think we are doing the things that I describe in the book. If you can see if somebody's doing that or not, that's not difficult to be able to read a person on that. The book certainly does not give the black man any rights over us in a certain kind of a way, because no man can begin to try to get us together until he look at himself in the book. See, we represent problem number two. They already know who problem number one is. Now, I know that many of us have heard a lot about, allegedly, as I said, about how much money I'm supposed to be making. I have to mention that because that's what they mention in all of the newspapers around the country. It's the weirdest thing I ever heard of. One article in Emerge magazine, before I left, the day before yesterday, I come out of Boston, I went back to Philadelphia, and somebody had faxed me a copy of an article out of Emerge magazine, and the magazine said that they were still getting letters about my book, but that they had decided not to print anything else about it because they had decided that my book had made enough money. So I called editors up. I told my secretary, I said, get him on the telephone. So I asked him, I said, that was a very ridiculous and ignorant remark to make, brother, since you don't know what the book sells for or how many I've sold or any of that. I say, plus, Why don't some of you black people get together and go tell IBM and Adidas and Nike and Reebok that they made enough money? Those are the people robbing our people. I said, go down there and tell Xerox they made enough money and see what they say. I have security mostly not because of black women. We ain't going to do nothing but fuss. You know, I have security because of black men. The book puts the black man on point. They get hysterical. They go into denial. They jump the seats, charge down the aisle. You'd be surprised. So it's not the black woman that this book is upset, because many of our black men don't want to take responsibility for their family. Many of them, not just because of financial reasons, many of them have accepted so much of the hype in the media that they don't know what it would be like to be in charge. They got doubt. They have fear. They are afraid that they will fail. We are all afraid of failure. The major tool that was used against us during slavery was the implication of fear. We have to get past that fear. Our men have to stop being scared to say, yes, I'm the head of the house. They need to know that every woman want to know her limitations with her man. Any woman that can do a man any kind of way and have her way with him and say anything she wants to him, she ain't going to want him in a minute. We have to know what the black line is. I had did an interview the other day from a newspaper out of Baltimore. Anyway, so they had brought down the camera crew and stuff, and so they were trying to interview me. So, of course, they got on that favorite part of the book, you know, that everybody deal with. And so he asked me, I haven't been slapped in the mouth. So I told him, I say, well, this book is not an autobiography, first of all. I said, and secondly, I said, I don't get that far out of control. I say, since that's how it's described, it's very easy to keep that from happening. Just don't do that. So I said, I don't do that. I don't talk like that. I said, I can tell by his tone of voice when it's time to stop talking. That's the most amazing thing to me is how our people go around the country trying to pretend that we ain't white. And that I made that up. Yeah. But as I said, this book demonstrates that we are not as different as we like to think that we are. So what I'm going to go over real brief right now is what the attributes are of the good black woman. Since she's not on television, we may not recognize her. Okay. Now, the good black woman has seven attributes, and then I'm going to explain to you how to utilize those in your day-to-day life. The good black woman has self-discipline, courteousness, cheerfulness, self-respect, intelligence, cleanliness, and love. Now, we've heard that terminology. You know, it's like one of those where they tell you, pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. What do that mean? You know, how can I make that functional in my day-to-day life to benefit me as a practice? It sounds like all theory. Where's the practicum? What do I do? The good black woman has self-discipline. That's self-control. Let me make that real for you, sisters. We can start with our mouth. The good black woman can control her mouth. She don't have to say everything that comes up. It's okay if he get the last word sometime. You know, she don't cuss in public. And she works on not cussing in private. She don't tear a man down with her mouth, because they can't out-argue her. Can't nobody out-argue her. I have charged that we nag our men too much. We keep our men's head tied up so much with our petty grievances about our personal relationship that he don't have time to think and plan for our future, because he got to deal with what's going to happen with us every day. You know, it's real odd. When the black man come home, he almost have to do a wind test or stick his toe in the door. He don't know what's waiting. He don't know who in there today. He know it's a possibility that there's some kind of new monster that he didn't even know about yesterday. So, you know, we need to not make it like that. We need to not be so vicious with our mouth. men are not petty like that. They're not going to out-argue us. And it has been proven that verbal abuse is just as harmful as physical abuse. So let's not use our mouth to do that to him. The good black woman is courteous. She says, thank you, baby. I appreciate you doing that. I appreciate every effort you make. Try harder. I'm going to work with you. Thank you. I know you did your best. Now, that's a whole new language. But just to say that during the course of the day, every day, with the man that you're trying to be with or want to be with will make our life easier. We can't get it if we don't give it. We keep wanting them to give us and do something for us that we refuse to do and give to them. It don't work like that. The good black woman has self-respect. She don't have to go out naked just to get the attention of a man. I have sisters all over the country, and they come up to me after the lectures, and they'll be talking to me, and they'll say, well, you know, all he think about is sex. All he think about is my body. I say, why don't you show him something else? And then here's the really good one. They'll come up, and they'll have a weave. They have on false eyelashes, another whole face, false fingernails, and all of that. And then they'll say, but I'm looking for a real man. The good black woman can pull a dress down without thinking that it devalues her. She doesn't have to use her body because she has so many other good attributes about herself to get the attention of a man. We can take the sisters in a position to take all of the charge and sexual energy out of the black community by just dressing differently. We have the power and control over that. That don't stop you from being beautiful. That don't stop you from getting a man. And it certainly puts things on the right perspective so some other judgments can be made other than physical. Don't take no knowledge, wisdom, and understanding to have a sexual reaction. That's the most base. We spend less time doing that than anything else we do. All wrong, because that's just not the way it is.
Okay. That was the third segment of the sister, and what we're going to do now is I'll be coming to you directly from the Black Woman's Guide and Understanding the Black Man so that the sisters will get some information on the brother. And it states here in Chapter 2 under the heading of Identity, it says, trying to identify the black man or to get them to uniformly identify themselves is quite complicated. The cause of this complication is his overall unfamiliarity with his exact origin, aims, and purpose. Some of them spew various definitions and views about who they are. Over the past 50 years or so, they have changed their title several times, so it is obvious that they are periodically undecided about who they are and unable to settle on a word that aptly portrays who they wish to be. They have been called niggers, negros, or niggeras, and claim that they do not like this label. They still tend to use this term with each other, facilitating between using it to express fondness or as an insult. Later, they will refer to themselves as colored. By order of more educated among them, they settle for negro for a short time. As years pass, they outline another reference contrary to their previous position of claiming they hated the term. And they, after much prompting, preferred to be recognized as black. As years progressed and they became more politically astute, they selected the modern term Afro-American. Their latest preference in the answer to being African-American or just African, he does not seem to be primarily concerned with locating the place of his beginning. He seemingly is satisfied with settling on African continent as his homeland. It has proven impractical to question them as a group regarding their identity, and the closest they come to being unified is collectively state. I am a black man, and they deem this answer to be sufficient to define for that woman and the world who they are and what their needs consist of. Now, I want to stop there and add something to that in regards to us getting some clarity in our roles in the relationship. It is very, very important for people of African descent to have an identity. All nations on this planet, all peoples on the planet from other nations have an identity. If I ask the Chinese, what's your nationality? He'll say, well, I'm Chinese. And I asked him, well, how can you tell me that you're Chinese? What makes you a Chinese? Well, we know that there's a landmass called China, and there's a Chinese government, and he looks Chinese. And in a lot of cases, he can speak the Chinese language. So therefore, the entire world views him as Chinese because he has a nationality that is associated with a landmass and other attributes. And the same thing with Germans, the same thing with Italians. I mean, everybody has a nationality that's associated with a landmass. So it is imperative for us, and me included, to have a nationality that's associated with a landmass. The lie that was told to us that all black people came to this country as a result of slavery is just that, a lie. That is one of the biggest lies ever perpetrated against people of African descent to keep you from knowing who you are because of a slave system that was in place to make sure that you never understand who you are. And your identity, and your culture, and your history, and your story, it is very imperative for you to understand that so that you will awaken and become conscious. Because if you are conscious, black man, or African man, or Afro-American, or Negro, or colored, or whoever you claim yourself to be, if you become conscious of your identity by having a deep study of who you are, and you understand your story, then you can have a nationality just like everybody else, because now you have the power to explain to anybody who attempts to classify you as something other than you are. Identity is extremely important to us as people of African descent, both male and female, and the children. Now, when we understand our identity as a nation, a people attached to a government with a nationality, then we want to make sure that the entire household is on the same page. Mama is a national. Father's a national. Brother, sister, cousin, everybody. We want to bring this thing throughout the entire family. We don't want to argue with anybody. We don't want to force anybody to do anything. What we want to do is we want to do it ourselves and simply make sure that everybody that we know see us doing this, because that puts the ball in their court. You follow me? Okay. With that said, I'm going to go on now, and we're going to go in the same book. We're going to go on to page 133 now. And this time we are coming from chapter 9, and we're going to deal with religion. And she states the following in chapter 9, that the black man is a very spiritual human being, not necessarily attached to a church or specific faith, but he does believe himself to be connected to A, the supreme being whom they now refer to as the creator. The first black church is recorded to have been erected in 1787. Prior to that, to that time, the black man preached and worshiped outdoors and called it the invisible church. At these church services, there were always much mourning and crying for the bad times and much singing and praises for the relief they expected to receive after they died. Now, I want to stop there because I received a phone call this morning and from a sister out in Arizona. And we got on a discussion about marriage. Now, my nationality is Moorish, and I do not participate in the culture, or Eurocentric culture, or the customs that it, as they are outlined inside the United States. And she asked me, she said, I'm confused. How do we go about getting married? And I outlined the following. I said, okay, well, let's just look at this from a common sense perspective. You and I met, okay? We're going to say that you and I met for the first time. We fell in love with one another, okay? She said, all right, I follow you. Okay, now, ask yourself a question. Who's there besides me and you? Well, nobody, just me and you. Okay, so the sheriff is not there. No, is a minister there? No, no minister's there. Is the police there? No, police is not there. What about a judge? No, the judge is not there. Okay, so if nobody is there but you and I have decided that we are going to come together as male and female, that's a decision that we made, and it doesn't have anybody in it in its very foundation. If it's not, if they're not there in the foundation, okay, then it doesn't. We don't have to have anybody else later on to decide for us how our relationship should go, right? She says, right. I said, okay. Now, let's say that we decide that we're going to engage in sex. She says, okay. And we're going to procreate, and then we bring a child in the world. She says, okay, I follow you. I said, now, while we're in the bedroom together, you and I, is there a minister there? No, no minister. Is there a sheriff or a judge or any politicians in the room? No, there's none of these people there. Okay, so now what we're going to do now is we're going to get married. How do you think we ought to do it? She says, I don't know. I'm listening to you. I said, well, I'll tell you how to do it. This is what I need you to do. Go and tell all your family members that you're going to need them to attend to come to the wedding because you and I are going to get married. And what I'll do is I'll go and gather up all my family members and let them know that I'm getting married, and we're going to invite them to our wedding. And what you and I are going to do once they're all there, and you're going to get a book for your family members to sign. I'll get a book for mine to sign and print their name and their signatures on that book because they are witnesses to the fact that you and I have decided that we're going to be husband and wife, and we're going to take care of ourselves as a basic family unit. She says, okay, I follow you. I say, all right, now, you read your vows to me, and I'll read mine to you, and we will pronounce each other man and wife. Now, there is no one else outside of the relationship that has any stock in a relationship. It's just you and I. There's no record. There's no minister there to do anything. We don't need him. If he wasn't there in the beginning, we're not going to need him in the end. So now what you and I are going to do, we're going to maintain consciousness as a basic family unit. I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that I'm conscious. I'm going to everything that I can to make sure, as head of the household, to make sure that there's enough materials in the household so that everybody in the household can remain conscious. If there is a problem, and someone says, well, we're going to have to call a police officer. Well, when the police officer come there, we have to let him know that we're not a part of his system of doing things. There is no resident located in his files anywhere that is, where he has to participate in anything. It doesn't have anything to do with him. Now, if he still has a problem, then what we'll do is we can file a lawsuit. And we can call on, bring our book with all our family members on it, into the courtroom as witnesses to the fact that you and I are husband and wife, and we don't are not a part of their system. You understand what I'm saying? So I wanted to put that out there for you because I personally don't live on anybody else or stand under anybody else's authority over me. I'm not a slave. I'm indigenous to the land, and I have a nationality, and I am conscious, and I study on a regular basis, and I'm on the level of moving on toward making sure that my people have the information that they need. So I'm going to go on to the final phase of this program here with the sister and see what else she has to say.
Doing that than anything else we do. So, you know, that doesn't always have to be the forefront issue. We know we are capable of that. The good black woman has intelligence, meaning that she knows how to behave properly in the streets. She's not in the wrong place. Some of our women don't know what else to do other than go to the bar. They need some activities. Some of our women thinking that staying home on the weekend is some kind of sin. Some of our women think that if they don't have a new outfit to wear every day, that they go self-destruct. You know, we have a lot of just that kind of nonsense going. Every time we buy new outfits and clothes or whatever, all we're doing is sending money out of our community. We don't own no clothing store. If the white man closed the shoe factory, we'd all be here barefooted tonight. We don't own no shoe factory. You know, very base things that we don't own that we put our money into and demand we have to have them. A lot of times our men look at us and know that he ain't never going to be able to make enough money to give us all of the things we say we want. And don't no man want to be with no woman who he constantly got to deny her the things that she says she wants. And that represents failure to him, to have to always, you know, not be able to provide us with what we ask for. One of the ways we can do that is to start being satisfied with less. You know, the good black woman is clean. Now, that's a hard one. The good black woman try to keep the house clean. Good black woman is clean by her own body. You know, a lot of those things we kind of take for granted, but all of our people don't know about that. There are people who are angry with me because I even describe the fact that some of us as sisters don't have the proper personal hygiene as if that don't exist. We have too much falsehood and pretense going about our condition. Everybody that's dressed up ain't clean. The truth. We have to look at our condition in the light of truth. Stop reacting emotionally and pretending that just because we don't want to deal. One of the most difficult things that I deal with out here is trying to teach our people the difference between an actual fact and an opinion. Our people think that they can accept or reject truth based on how they feel about it. Your feelings don't change the truth. The truth is just going to be there. You can feel any kind of way you want to feel about it. Those are just, those kind of emotions have kept us from growing because anything we don't like, we just reject that and say, well, I don't believe that. That don't mean that it's not the truth. It just makes you a disbeliever. The good black woman practices non-possessive loving. Now, y'all know that's a hard one. Now, envy is wanting what someone else has. And jealousy, of course, is just selfishness. Non-possessive loving is not an easy one for us to practice. And, of course, I have a lot of sisters and some brothers who are in disagreement with me saying that. But the actual fact is that our men are outnumbered about 5-1. And nature is going to require that the men take responsibility for more than one woman and her children. Most of our men have children by more than one woman anyway. So I don't know why that was such a surprise, allegedly, when I said that. The black man has not been waiting on me to tell him he could have more than one woman. You know, I'm in agreement with the rest of y'all. I don't think he should do that, but I fail like you did. There are some things, perhaps, about the nature of our man that we have been given some definitions about that are not true. There are some things he can do that we call him a dog. We do not have the same capabilities as a man. I am not talking about fornication and adultery. That's something else. I'm talking about actual responsibility of fatherhood and husbandhood of another family. That's quite different from fornication and adultery. We don't have the same capabilities as them. That's right. A man can have two homes, two sets of in-laws. He can eat dinner at two houses, two sets of children, two garages, two separate sets of friends attached to that woman. He can have all of that. We can't do that. We can't cook dinner at two houses. We can't sleep with one man four nights a week and another one three. Ain't no man gonna agree with that. We can't have one set of children. We leave in one place and go and stay in another place and take care of another set. It doesn't work for us. Now, that does not mean that we can't have sex with more than one man. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about just taking responsibility for your children. Now, certainly, every man can't take financial responsibility for all of his children. He can do something. But a man who is spending time with a child is going to do something for it. Because then they'll find out what we have since we've been taking care of them by ourselves. You don't like to always say, no, I can't do it. No, I ain't got it. So the children will make you get it up. You spend some time with it. You know, that's an important thing. The effectiveness of the principles that I just described, their usefulness has not diminished just because modern opinion has changed about them. There is not a black man in this room who does not still enjoy it if his woman bake him a cake. Well, our young daughters are being raised and taught that that's old style and that's out of fashion. We are not making those rules. Somebody else is, and they're imposing them on us and making us think that we have to qualify under them. I tell the brothers, just like I tell the sisters, if you have a woman that you've been working with for months or years, and you can't get that woman to get in agreement with your program, then get rid of her and get another one. And I tell the sisters the same thing. If you're with a man you can't agree with, don't make his life miserable. Get with a man you can agree with. But we spend too much time living in hell with each other. We spend too much time tearing each other down, trying to make the other person do different or function different. If you want somebody to change, first change yourself. We set the example. We are the teacher. We are the mother. We set the example.
I know I just saw some of this happening, and it was difficult for me. I'm still studying myself, trying to learn how to be a better wife, a better mother.
Okay. That was the final segment by Scheherazade Ali on the live feed. And I want to go directly into dealing with Moorish brothers and sisters who are conscious and who are single and are looking for a conscious mate. There is an old adage, and it goes like this. If it is money that you are after, you must go where it is and where it is being spent. Now, we know that in the United States, we have a lot of brothers and sisters who are single and that are out there in the world, but they're not conscious. So, therefore, what we have to look for is we have to find out where the conscious brothers and sisters gather. And if we attend these meetings, then our chances of running into someone is greater, because we are finding conscious people gathered together in a single place, because they're trying to be conscious. They're trying to learn everything that they can about their culture and their story. And a lot of these men and women are single. Now, before we do that, is one thing that I want you to understand, brothers and sisters. Before you go out looking for a mate, have you prepared yourself for that mate? Have you provided something along the lines of maintaining consciousness? He or she is going to need a place to come. We're going to need conversation. We're going to need water to drink. We're going to need food to eat or whatever it is that you do. But preparation is the underlying factor that I'm trying to get here to. So I think that that is the place to go if you're looking for conscious people. Now, another thing, especially when you are dealing with someone who's single, we have to look at the malleability factor. You want to deal with someone that can learn. You don't want to deal with someone who you're trying to talk to them and they're trying to talk to you, and you got information going for them, you provided information for them, but they never use it. You're going one way and they're going another way. Don't waste your time with that. If they're not malleable, if they cannot be taught, then don't waste your time with that. Okay? All right. And so if you are single and you are conscious, and that was the question, what about most men and women who are single looking for a conscious mate? Okay? So therefore, if that's what you're looking for, well, you want to go where the conscious people are. If they are if they're having a gathering down at this place here, and such person is coming to town, they're going to be speaking about ancient African history there, and they're going to be people there. Well, this is where we want to go, but we want to go there with more than just looking for a mate in mind. We want to find some companionship, but we want a conscious person. And at the same time, we want to glean the information from whatever is being discussed wherever you are. Okay? So I wanted to put that out there for you. So therefore, you would have that little bit. And I know I'm not telling you anything that a lot of us don't already know. But for those of you who do not know that, that's what you want to do. You want to go to a place where the people are. You want to be there. And sooner or later, you may run into someone who is conscious that you can deal with and that you can be with, and who knows, you may consummate a relationship and get together and go from there. So I wanted to add that in for you. We've been coming from two different books. The first book is The Black Man's Guide to Understanding the Black Woman. The second book is The Black Woman's Guide to Understanding the Black Man. Now, let's deal with the children. Now, you have to understand that when children come in the world, it is the parents' job to make sure that what goes inside the brains of the children is something that they're going to be able to use as they progress from male or female to boy to girl, and from boy to girl to man to woman. So going back on what I've already told you about your nationality and being associated with a landmass, it equals consciousness. We want to give them a perspective from a foundation of a, for lack of a better word, a descendancy of African centeredness. And I'm talking to my people. Okay, that's your basic foundation of what you want to put in the child's mind. The child should be able to tell you about Timbuktu. They should be able to tell you and anybody else about the ancient Kemetans. You want to put that in there, but you also want to point out to them, as their teacher, because the sisters have already described in the book that the mother is the first teacher. So if the mother is the first teacher and that mother has a child, well, and the child is spending more time with the mother than they do with the father, then it is the mother's job to make sure that that child have adequate information about their culture and their story, and also about his story that he created for his people. You understand? And you also want to make sure that your child at an early age understands what it means to have an identity. You want to give them all the information that you can about religion. You also want to make sure that they understand about the indwelling spiritualism and the workings of the body, the workings of the brain, just like I outlined it in the past two broadcasts about the pineal gland and the indwelling spirit and all these things. This is information that is vital for the child to learn and to keep reiterating this information in the child's brain to protect your children and to stabilize the basic unit of society, which is the family, with husband, wife, and child. Okay? Now, that is the end. We're moving toward the end of our broadcast tonight, ladies and gentlemen. And the clock on the wall says that's all. And I hope that by some hook or crook that you have gotten some out of this broadcast. I've been your host, Ahaka Amana Elbe. And until next time, good night.